This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Saturday Magazine, sponsored by Velocity Rewards,
the award-winning loyalty program for Virgin Australia's frequent flyers.
Hey, you. Yeah, you, on the job site. Did you know that over half of the people who listen to Joy are allies of the LGBTIQ plus community, just like you? So you may not be aware, times are very tough financially at Joy, and we're reaching out for your support. So tell your workmates, your next door neighbour, and even your mum to head over to joy.org.au and help us build Joy Nation by making a donation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
This is Saturday Magazine.
And you're listening to Saturday Magazine, Makatas, and Neil Mitchell, who's our special guest co-host. And now we have our next guest, Maka.
Senator Kimberly Kitching, who has been a regular guest, and we always enjoy you coming in, Kimberly. You've been out and about a bit. You're on a lot of... How many committees?
Do you serve on a chair?
Well, I chair the Senate's Foreign Affairs, Defence and Trade Committee. In the Senate, the standing committees have two arms, so Erica Betts and I are each other's chairs and deputy chairs. But I sometimes sign off on text messages to him, "Your sometime loyal deputy."
Erica Betts.
But we do get on, we get on very well, and I think one of the privileges of my job is actually, it's not a workplace where, you know, you go into the tea room and say, "Oh, how are you? How was your weekend?" And someone says, "Oh, look, it was fine." You really do get to know people's views on things and why people hold some views very, very deeply. And I think that's a real privilege.
So what's Eric's excuse?
That's a whole discussion in itself, Macca.
Oh, we've got airtime, Dale. Go for it.
We haven't got that much. We haven't got that much.
Call me Dale, not the senator.
Oh, no. It's all good here. I love it here. And you know the other thing I like about Joy is that people have a sense of humour. I have been here when there's been some quite subversive comments, but it's really lovely to ask you a subversive question.
Oh,
excellent.
Kimberly, what's it like to be back in opposition? Clearly you must not have expected to be in opposition at this point in the game.
Well, I think that there was a very high expectation that we were going to win. And I'm always very conscious because I've been involved in other campaigns where there was an expectation, perhaps not as high as this one. And my view is that, you try to be realistic or not count your chickens. And
you don't put it all on 32 red.
No. And I mean, we were at sort of Winx-like odds. And remember that some of the betting agencies were paying out actually before the election.
I know, I got paid out.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah. I only bet on elections. I don't bet on horses, but I only bet on elections.
And did you get paid out on the Friday, the day before?
Yep, absolutely.
Some were paying out 2 days before.
Yeah, I did well.
But we there was a very high expectation. I mean, what's it like to be back in opposition? Well, obviously, it's always good to be in government, I think that, I feel it's a great privilege to be in the position that I am in. Mm. And I think that it's possible to affect change. I mean, I don't think you can just wait till, you're occupying the Treasury benches. Obviously, incumbency gives you the levers of government. But I still would hate to think that people, think that there's nothing that you can do, that you can't advocate for positions and you can't advocate for policy or advocate for change. And I think that, that's something to keep in mind.
Hmm. Now, you're a good friend of Bill Shorten.
Yes.
Yeah. I knew him well over the years.
And you were in a lunch club together.
We were, and he used to appear on the program every second week with Joe Hockey.
That's right, yes.
But we used to have regular lunches and we achieved things. There was a little luncheon group that got together and said, "Okay, we won't make any public noise about this, but let's achieve things." And Bill did some really good work. Mm. No question, some really good work. But why? And you know that what the bill we see publicly isn't the real Bill. Why does he have to confect this character? Why can't the Minders just say, be yourself?
I think, well, I remember that what we're seeing, I think, in media for any leader or any, you know, person who has a prominent position is that you're only seeing a grab of that person. And you're trying to get a message across in a very short amount of time. You and I both know that, in fact, where people used to watch much longer segments of the TV news.
I've watched his speeches. It's not Bill. It is not Bill. There is no way that is the Bill Shorten I know. And I don't think it's the Bill Shorten you know. And I've had this debate with him privately, and I believe some former leaders in the Labor Party have put a similar thing to him. Yes, it's risky to be yourself. Yes, it's risky to be Bill from the mineshaft down in Beaconsfield. It's risky to be Beaconsfield Bill, but that worked. And being this sanitised, scripted, artificial character, he's done himself a damage. I think it essentially cost him the election, cost you the election.
Well, I think, I think going back to the question Tass was asking me, I think the election, there was a, you know, if you look at it numerically of where we won seats, where we lost seats, you know, I think that really we probably needed more focus in Queensland. We only held 6 out of 30 seats.
That's not what the review said that was released yesterday. No, the review was very clear. It said that the reason why you lost the election was because you had a confused policy set of promises, and secondly, people just didn't like Bill Shorten.
Well, it's had three main reasons, and obviously there were 26 recommendations.
I'm sorry, I got
and,
two no, out no. of three.
So there was weak strategy.
Yep.
There was poor adaptability, so the moving from Malcolm Turnbull to Scott Morrison and not taking that into account to the level it should be. And then, the status of the leader, whether the leader was unpopular. Look, and on that point and on what Neil is saying, I would say that really that's a metric that people I know in politics who do campaigning are very leery of, and that is because obviously incumbency gives you, you know, a more of a popularity edge. And I think, you know, I can think of opposition leaders, both, you know, whom I've campaigned with. You know, I can think of, you know, Daniel Andrews, for example, Steve Brax. Look, I would say maybe Mark Latham was a little bit of an exception to this. But, you know, there are certainly opposition leaders who are, you know, it's not really a metric that is taken into account by people, because most people who are expert in campaigning say that people look to their interest. Now, whether that's economic or another sort of interest.
The trust of a leader is always going to be crucial. Remember when Julia Gillard said she was popular when she was elected, started to go down in the polls, and she said, I'm going back to being the real Julia, which she didn't actually do. But
no,
and that was a silly
so
thing to say.
It was,
look,
it was the
same
thing.
Where's the real Bill? Bring him out.
And I think we did see that when he was Parlsec for Disabilities. I think we see
it
now.
You saw it once during the campaign when his mother was attacked. Yes. And that was a brilliant performance. No, it wasn't a performance. It was from the heart.
Yes.
Bill, more heart. Give us the real Bill. We need that sort of honesty in politics. And he's better than that.
Oh, I think he is a very warm person. And when you see
him... He doesn't show it.
When you see him with disability groups, or even, you know, I remember after a Q&A performance, it took him an hour and a half to get out of there because, you know, and obviously that audience is not all pro-Labor, and they give you the splits at the beginning of the show.
Get them. Nobody said 90% hate you. I think I guessed that.
Oh, Neil, that's not true.
It is at the ABC.
Kimberly.
Yes.
You know, I've watched you speak in the Senate, right? I've seen you at events. I listen to you on radio. It's consistent.
Do you listen to me on Sky After Dark?
No.
Well, occasionally I do.
No, I don't listen to Sky.
No, he doesn't have. But
you got to pay for it, don't you?
Oh no, you can get the app on your phone.
You pay for it. Watch Andrew Bolt. You pay for it.
Yeah.
The Go app.
But no, I only watch Sky because it's good to be able to get angry at the television rather than something else. But no. The point I'm making is, you know, you're consistent across those media platforms and your appearances and you know, whether it's, you know, at Michael Danby's office closing party or, you know, whether it's in the Senate, whether it's on Sky After Dark. I sometimes think, you know, when they've got the camera on someone else, you're thinking, why am I talking to these people? Like, do they really believe this? But you are consistent.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there's no... It's not... it's not... You know, you're not being the leader who's been given the talking points. Okay, you're a backbencher.
Well, actually, now I'm in the wider shadow ministry.
Oh, of course. Sorry, yes. Hang on, Tass will call you the minister.
Well, I don't deserve that title.
I would actually say that you probably are given the talking points.
Well, I'm very... Look, I think one of the...
You do, don't you? You get them.
But, well, I think that one of the...
You might get the oppositions as well.
Well, sometimes they do leave them out, and they leave them up on...
Yeah, they left it at 8,000 words, it was.
Yes.
Nonsense.
Did you get it?
Yeah. It was released accidentally to all the media.
Mm. I mean, the people I guess I'm attracted to, whether, you know, across the parties, are people who have a very good sense, I think, of political philosophy. Mm. So you don't have to agree with people all the time. I mean, in fact, that would be detrimental to our system. But I am attracted to people where you can have that debate and where you can have, who are knowledgeable about, you know, where politics is going or where it's been. Philosophy, I'm attracted to that. And I think that, some of the, you know, there are lots of commentators who are very knowledgeable, and I would say I'm sitting between some who are very knowledgeable in this room. So
we know nothing about politics.
I know.
So is the Labor Party philosophy pro-worker still?
Yes. Well, it's in our DNA, it's in our name.
I agree.
It's in our very name.
So what about this logging decision by the Andrews government?
Look,
the CFMEU's gone off about it today.
Yes, and I think that
sloppy
jobs are always important, and I would think that there are some aspects of the state government's policy decisions with which I don't agree.
You don't agree with the logging decision?
I probably wouldn't. And I don't agree with the moratorium on conventional gas exploration either. You know, I've just been up in central Queensland on a Minerals Council tour, and I can tell you one of the, you know, problems that people there, so not just in the mines, but when you go out, you know, into the towns, et cetera, is actually the need for more energy. So, you know, the fact that we're offshoring a lot of our energy supply.
Well, it's keeping gas prices up, isn't it?
That's right. It is keeping gas prices up. And one of the things I am conscious of that I remember on your program on Talkback, Neil, a long time ago, was a woman phoning in. It was a very cold winter, and she phoned in and she said, I can't turn on my heater because it's too expensive. And I hate that with every fibre of my being, because it is treating people in an undignified fashion when they can't have heating on or cooling on, especially elderly Australians who've done nothing. You know, she was from a regional part of Victoria. She's done nothing but work and contribute to her community, and she can't turn on a heater because it's too expensive. She thinks it's too expensive. That actually is a totally... It's treating that person and people, you know, who can't afford your power bills, it's treating them, you know, in an undignified way. And I really find that to be, you know, something we have to
Gas exploration is a solution.
Yeah.
The other solution, of course, is to shift to renewable energy sources or to actually invest in something that's completely different, isn't it?
Yes. And, in fact, the government this week, late last week, adopted one of the ALP's policies, which was
the
Clean Energy...
You mean?
Yeah, the federal government, the Clean Energy Finance Corporation. They gave an extra $1 billion. Now, you have to remember, in the Liberal Party room, there are more positions on energy and climate change than there are in the Kama Sutra. They are...
Oh,
on,
God,
that's a lie.
I realise I'm in a room where people have probably read the Kama Sutra. Have
you
read
No.
There's full deniability here.
I do have a pop-up Kama Sutra book in my bookshelf.
Pop-up?
Yeah. I'm happy to pass it on to you. I've never looked at it.
See what
so
you started?
You say.
You don't inhale either.
That wasn't in the talking points.
But so why have we got both policies you've described are pro-Greens? An anti-public, anti-people, anti-worker in one case, anti-public in the other. And Daniel Andrews, your mate, is this all about chasing the green votes? The latte sippers in...
I think the state government has been very clever in terms of, you know, having a progressive agenda, but actually then linking a lot of policy with jobs. And I think that has been a which I think they should do. I think, for example, converting the Ford factory into now manufacturing wind turbines has created hundreds of jobs. That is clever.
That's clever.
But it's more than being clever.
It's actually responsible.
It is responsible. And I think, you know, for jobs in that region, that part of Victoria, that's fantastic. So I think there have been some very, you know, there's a balance to be had there. And I think, you know, they've had real leadership on infrastructure development.
But is this about green votes? Is that what they're doing?
Well, I don't. I think that the, I mean, in those seats, if I was to look at that electorally, that's actually, you know, it's really the Green. The only where, you know, the only place really the Greens can win is really in the lower
targeted at Melbourne.
At Melbourne.
Oh, yeah, Daniel's all right. He stopped chopping down trees and won't dig up gas.
Look, I think
he's not after Hayfield. He's
I think that's one way to look at it, Neil. I mean, I'm going to chip in on this and say that the world is changing and we have to embrace new technologies. Whether we like it or not,
and I think the world is changing. The market is doing that. If you go to Palo Alto, venture capitalists are investing in renewables.
Well, there
technology,
are 3 million roofs in Australia now. There are 3 million roofs in Australia now that have solar panels. Yeah. 3 million.
And I went to a solar farm, and dare I mention it? It was Adani Renewables was the company, and they have a solar farm in central Queensland. And, you know, it's not even using the latest technology, but it's feeding onto the
And I remember driving through the south of Greece with my partner, and I said to him as we were approaching my mother's village, I said, this is a very backwater place. And as we're approaching it, his eyes lit up and he said, what are you talking about? There's wind and solar everywhere. And we got to this little old village in the south of Greece, in the Peloponnese, that was purely fueled by renewables. Mm.
And you can see it in
the world's changing
the Western Highlands in Papua New Guinea, where coffee plantations, because supply of electricity is so unreliable there, that in fact they use renewable, they use solar paneling.
The world is changing, and it will change, and has to change carefully, and not torture that elderly lady who can't afford to turn on the heating. You have to
That's
somehow
right.
find a way and not drive people out of their jobs.
I
in
agree
Hayfield.
With that too.
And at the moment, we're not doing it. If there is a balance, we've got it wrong. And I don't understand quite. By the way, I think that lady, I remember ringing me. I think the Prime Minister was in at the time. I think it was Malcolm Turnbull.
Yes, I think that's right.
And he said, I'll ring you later. And I called and she said, did the Prime Minister ring? She said, yeah. And I said, what did he say? And she said, nonsense. Yeah. It's all nonsense. She just wasn't impressed by the Prime Minister ringing her at home.
But I always do remember her. Mm. I mean, there are some things that
she used to sit there with a blanket
that's
around
right.
her.
Yeah.
Now, we're going to go to a quick break. Then when we come back, we've got some more questions for you.
Oh, good.
Can I have a look at your talking points?
No, these are... Well, I want to, you know, I've got to hear that, you know, retail trade numbers are the worst in 30 years because I was coming up the mall.
Actually, there is something before we go to a break.
Yes.
You know what I am absolutely disgusted with is the wage theft that's gone on at Woolworths.
Yes.
Multi-billion dollar company that has probably hundreds of people in its HR and its payroll area, right?
Yes.
And they didn't get it right, not just for a year, but for nearly a decade, right? You know...
Well, it's going to be $300
million. $300
million,
and they haven't even gone to the other arms of Woolworths.
Yeah.
But the thing is, this is actually about the culture in business that says... Okay, it's actually all right not to pay people what they're entitled. You can argue about whether the award is fair or whatever. That's another matter.
But I thought you weren't giving an editorial today,
no.
Micah.
I want to hear
tell David Davis that.
I want to hear Kimberly's views
yes.
on wage theft because, you know, at the end of the day, I've actually stopped shopping at Woolworths.
Oh, have you?
Yes.
That's very interesting.
You are listening to Saturday Magazine with Macca, Tass, Neil Mitchell and our guest for the next... I don't know, 15 or 20 or 30 minutes or something. Senator Kimberly Kitching.
Kimberly.
It's very
Kimberly.
Alliterative.
Kimberly. so you were talking about what it feels like to be in opposition, and you haven't answered the question yet.
Well, I think in the evening of May the 18th, you know, there's that terrible, you know, really a gut-wrenching sort of reaction. And I'll tell you really why I do quite a bit of yoga and One of the things I think, and I'll tell you why I'm mentioning that, because one of the things that teaches you is to be in the moment, to be present. And I think that's very important, because on the morning of the first caucus meeting after the election, I was driving up to Parliament House, and you know, you see the flag and then you see the building, and I thought, I am so grateful and I am so lucky. It is such a privilege for me to be here. And I think to remember that actually then counters, you know, disappointment and bitterness about various, you know, and I think the review explores some of the, you know, the lack of decision making that went on. But I do always remember that, and that is actually the important thing, because it does not mean that you cannot advocate for people. It doesn't mean you can't advocate for policy. I always remember that, and I am very grateful to be there.
There's one thing that people should understand, that parliamentarians, you know, whether they're members of the House of Reps or the Senate or whichever parliament they're in, opposition and government do speak, and they do form, you know, friendly relationships.
Absolutely.
And the reality is that if you're in government and you're a minister and an opposition shadow minister or person wants to talk to you about something, you listen.
Yes.
And you actually take it on board, and you do listen to it. Because also at the back of that is the understanding that when they lose government,
absolutely,
that the person who's having that chat to them might be a minister, and they want to put a point of view. So a lot of members of the public don't understand that there is a lot of discussion behind the scenes, and a lot of discussion. But I'm wondering, you know, you were very proud to be back there. You know, you were sad that Labor didn't win. Is Anthony Albanese going to lead you to victory?
I think so, and I think that what's happened in the speeches, so his headland speech on jobs and the economy, he's going to speak to the Chifley Centre soon on you know, democracy, and he will give a number of headland speeches. And I think, you know, we will be going into an election against a 9-year government, a government really that hasn't had much of a plan to do very much at all in the economy. You know, we've seen the Reserve Bank recently, well, in fact, in the last week, say that, you know, downplay again economic factors for economic growth.
And the heads of the big four banks, okay, they're not popular, but they're saying, we're cutting rates anymore, you know, we need some pump priming.
And remember, this is a government that's also doubled federal government debt.
Yes.
It's more than $500 billion now.
Nobody's talking about that anymore.
They voted with the Greens to remove Labor's debt ceiling.
And the only reason that...
Nobody's talking about that
And the
anymore,
only reason they're going to have a surplus is because the interest rate that they're paying has dropped.
We're in a per capita
debt has
recession.
Actually doubled.
If you took out immigration, we would be in recession. And that, so this is a government that really hasn't had much of a plan at all for dealing with what is, you know, vital for every Australian. And Neil, before I came into the studio, you were discussing, you know, how you arrive at topics, and you said that one of the, you know, does it touch people's lives? Well, I would say that the economy touches everyone's lives, and you know, you can talk in everyone understands that at their strip shopping centre they're seeing more for lease signs. Mm. Everyone understands that really the economic, there hasn't been economic growth. Wages have stagnated. And how do we get an economy rolling again? This is a very important factor.
Stagnated wages mean less spending. Less spending means less GST to the states. Less GST means less services.
And Macca might be looking at my very scrawly handwritten notes here, where I've got retail trade figures the worst in 30 years.
Yeah.
The worst since the 1990s.
Nine solid months of car sales falling.
Yes.
And utes, double cab utes. That is the best indication of how tradies are doing, right, when they're not trading up to new utes. Trust on this. That is having a real impact.
So what do you do? How do you fix it?
Well,
how do you improve it?
Well, I think that, you know, we need some stimulus, and I think we need the government to actually start moving the large and very effective economic levers it has, because obviously if we're at 0.75%, you know, the Reserve Bank's rates, there's not much more that they can do. I mean, there's not many more.
So do you mean
of a
investing
rate
in big infrastructure
well, I
projects?
Think infrastructure projects, you know, I think there probably should be... an inquiry or some movement around some of the payments, like Newstart, for example. And the reason I say that is if you increase the rate of Newstart, you get people who will actually spend money.
They will actually spend
and,
that money.
And
So ditch the surplus? Ditch the aim for a surplus?
Well, I mean, both sides of politics would be would like to have a surplus. I think, though, that there's room for movement and still have an economy that, as the government very cutely said a couple of months ago, that's now in balance because, of course, they haven't reached a surplus yet. But we'll see next year whether that eventuates. But we
you're
are
saying
going
that
to
they
need,
shouldn't. It's not a priority, isn't it?
Well, the thing is that you can try to have that as a goal and kill the economy before you get
so
to that goal.
Which should they do?
So, well, I think they need to stimulate the economy. And I think
and that
the
means
Reserve
lose
Bank,
the surplus.
You know, in that sort of, you know, proof of life, you know, photograph that that the Treasurer had with the Governor of the Reserve Bank, you know, yeah. saying, oh, look, here's the Governor of the Reserve Bank. No, really, he's really agreeing with all of our policy or our lack thereof. This is, you know, they are going to have
so
to
Kimberly,
do something. If you have, you've got three more rate cuts before you, at 0.25, before you're at zero.
Yeah.
Then you've got, obviously, people who've got money in bank accounts who are getting now very low interest rates.
So what about the tax cuts that we all just got?
That's right, they haven't been spent. I think people are
keeping
them.
So why aren't people spending those?
Because they're worried. There is a lack of confidence in the economy.
Yeah, I agree.
And they're keeping it. They're not spending it.
And it's important to remember, you know, Labor lost the election on the basis of a whole lot of the policies and the confusion. The government won the election.
And the leader.
The government won the election on the reverse side of that, on the basis of their policies. But the reality is, if the government doesn't, you know, pump prime the economy, you know, retail is in serious, serious trouble.
That's right.
You know, we have, you know, car sales. You know, you've got, you look at some of the figures for the banks, and yes, whilst loan acceptances have recovered, you know, the reality is people don't want to spend, and they don't want to spend because they don't, their wages are not increasing, they're not sure about the future, they don't, and they know that things are not going well. So the government actually, think back to the GFC. What did the federal government do then?
I keep getting back to the surplus. The government says it's committed to a surplus. The opposition seem to have been supporting that. Is the opposition now in a position that it says pump priming is more important than the surplus?
Well, I think it would. I think there's room for. Well, I think the surplus will be very. Who knows? But it seems from government commentating and from some of the economic commentators, the surplus will be narrow. But I still think there's enough there to start looking at doing at actually, you know, stimulating the economy. And I think that is going to have to be looked at. Because you cannot, I mean, it will be interesting to see the Christmas retail figures because you just can't have that many. I mean, remember, at the end of the day, what we're talking about is jobs in retail.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm looking out that window and, you know, you've got Target across the road with the mall, the Bourke Street Mall is down the road. You can't afford to have more and more people losing their jobs or having insecure work because that actually then makes them, they're not going to go out and spend any tax cut that they received. I mean, this is a very dangerous, to get this balance right, this is a very dangerous time where, you know, if you don't have that spending, of course retailers are going to start cutting their costs.
And look, they already are. So if I can come back quickly to, you know, to wage theft.
Mm, yes.
You know, this is also a problem. You know, we thought, you know, a lot of people thought, okay, it's just in hospitality. Oh, you know, now it's in retail, you know, it's in this. And, you know, we've got a message here from, you know, a listener, you know, on this issue. But the federal government said they're going to criminalise wage theft. The state government plans to do that.
Yes.
Okay, that's fine. You know, let's say the law changes. Haven't seen that legislation. But it's a really, really serious problem, isn't it? That, you know, people are not being paid their correct entitlements, and companies and individuals think it's all right to do that. Why? How have we arrived at this point?
Well, I think that Well, I actually, that is a very interesting question. And, you know, we might have lost the May election, but of course, 10 years ago or 20 years ago, the Liberal Party would have been entirely on the side of capital. And by that I mean, by capital, I mean employers. And of course, we have been advocating, the Labor side of politics has been advocating very strongly for, well, since the Labor movement, you know, began, that in fact people should be paid fairly, you know, a fair day's pay for a fair day's work. And I think that what we've seen now is actually an ideological shift from the Liberal Party to actually say, this is not okay that people are not receiving their just pay. And I think Christian Porter this week, the Attorney General, the Liberal Attorney General, potential leadership candidate down the road for the Liberal Party, is he has actually said, this isn't, you know, we can't afford to have this. Woolworths is a big brand. It's a very well-known brand. We can't, you know, they've got very large HR departments and they can't get it right.
This is not acceptable. Let's blame the award. That's bullshit.
I agree with you.
It's about companies and individuals thinking it's okay, and it's not okay.
And I think he made another interesting point, which was, you know, they get involved in social programs, you know, sporting clubs, but if they can't get this right, it undoes everything else. And, you know, last year I was in the Pilbara, and a chief executive of, I won't name the entity, but I was sitting next to him at dinner, and he was saying, you know, we do all of this work with Indigenous Australians. Obviously in Western Australia there's a lot of the mining companies that do that, but he was saying that, so we were having this discussion, I said, yes, but if you can't get everyone out of a mine at the end of the day safely, then you're sort of undoing your own brand management. You know, you're undoing what you're saying that you stand for.
Could I just move to something else? As we talked about earlier, you're deputy chair of all these foreign affairs and trade committees. Is it possible to take a moral stand on the atrocities that are unfolding in China without blowing trade with China? Are we able to stand up and say we don't agree with organ harvesting, we don't agree with concentration camps, we don't agree with locking up Australian citizens without trial and torturing, we don't agree, for that matter, with a social credit system, although maybe that's your business, but we don't agree with all these other things. Can we take that principled stand without losing trade? Does money come out of morality?
Well, I would hope so. I would hope we can actually criticise. Well, I actually think that both Penny Wong as the Shadow Foreign Minister and Maurice Payne as the Shadow Minister have actually both been very strong on these, on that point. And in fact, Maurice Payne gave a speech in Washington a couple of weeks ago where she did actually take a very strong stand. And that's obviously, we have quite a bipartisan view on foreign policy in our system. And I think that, you know, we can and we should, and what we have said, but what both sides have said, we have a, you know, democratic system, they have a communist system, these are different systems, and we should be able to critique some of the internals in any country and then still actually be able to maintain other relations.
I
think the last thing we want, and what we saw in the Cold War, was really an isolationist where we tried to isolate. Now, in the case of China, I actually don't think we are able to do that because the world economy is too intertwined now. It wasn't with the Cold War, but I think now, so we are going to have to we do not think what you are doing in terms of Tibet, for example.
Human rights, yeah.
There's only one way to spell appeasement, right? We've seen democratic governments before try and negotiate with military dictatorships, right? It doesn't work.
It does not. I agree with you.
We need, as a country, to actually have the discussion about whether or not we're going to be appeasers and the price that we will pay for that, or whether we're actually going to stand up for what we believe in. And having some discussion along that way is good, but at the end of the day, appeasement has one outcome, and I know what it will be in this. we need to start standing up for the things that we believe in, whether they're in China, whether they're in Uruguay, whether they're in Hong Kong. It doesn't matter where they are.
Venezuela.
We need to stand up for what we believe in and defend our values, not be appeasers and wait, you know, what's next? Scott Morrison coming back, you know, from China with a piece of paper in his hand waiting. We have a surplus in our time.
Yeah.
You know, it's not good enough.
I totally agree with you.
Good.
I think this is unprecedented.
Good time.
Kimberly, thank you for coming into the studio this morning.
I love it.
It's always great to have a long and a broad-ranging chat with you.
It was really fun. It was really good to have Neil here too.
Yeah. Let's do it again more often.
Yes.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.